It's time for another Steve Dale Petcast, sponsored by Zymox. Veterinarian recommended, pet parent trusted for resolving pets' ear, skin, and oral conditions for over 25 years. Now, here's Steve Dale.
Yes, indeed, the Petcast with veterinary behaviorist Dr. Deborah Horowitz, co-editor of Decoding Your Dog, and editor, co-editor, author of all of these books that your veterinarian has read over the years about pet behavior. Dr. Horowitz, it is always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, too, because you really help people learn a lot about what is the right thing to do with their pets to keep their relationship with them strong.
Well, I'm about to hit a hot button for you because because I know this about you. So I don't remember the day, but one day every year is National Hug Your Dog Day. And I wrote a blog post. Yep. I said, no, let's change that to National Love Your Dog Day, and wrote then in great detail about why hugging dogs is not a good idea in general. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I'm happy to, because data is becoming available all the time about dog bites. And dog bites have ticked up. It could be because more people own dogs now. Also could be because of the pandemic, people were inside more with their dogs. But one of the things that the research shows us is that in 81% of the photographs that researchers scored showing dogs that were being hugged, they were giving off one sign of discomfort, stress, or anxiety. And only 7.6% of the photographs showed dogs as comfortable with being hugged. The remaining 10%, it could go either way. So what that really tells us, first of all, I always hear people say, well, my dog loves being hugged. And my answer to them is, how do you know? You can't see your dog's face when you hug them. And that's where the disconnect comes, because the photographs show the face of the dog, but when you're hugging your dog, the dog's head is usually on your shoulder or maybe against your chest, and you can't look at their face. And dogs' faces are very expressive, and they do show stress, but they show it differently than people do. And they don't look happy. Their eyes are wide. They're licking their lips. They may be their eyes darting back and forth. And if you really look at the dog, you say, whoa, they're not liking that at all. So that it's important for people to realize just because the dog doesn't struggle to get away doesn't mean that they enjoy it. They may enjoy being close to us because they do care for us. I mean, they're very fond of us. But being in a hug doesn't allow them to escape. And that can be frightening. We've all been in that kind of hug, you know.
Yeah, mostly from some great aunt somewhere when we were 6 years old who grabbed us. Her name has to be Bertha, usually, and she grabs us and doesn't let us go. You know, but
right.
When you see, you're right about the faces of dogs, but I want to add on to that, because I would suggest that even if some people, maybe most people, at least some of the time, maybe most of the time, could see the dog's face, either we would misread what the dog is really trying to say, in part because we misread what the dog is trying to say, or in part because the dog loves me so much the dog couldn't possibly be saying, I don't love this. And we forget that dogs are not primates.
Well, dogs don't hug each other. So that is kind of the way to begin. Dogs don't hug each other. And if you look at a dog that's being hugged, oftentimes their ears are tight back to their head, which usually in the dog, if they're tight, then the dog is anxious. If they're loose, then they're happy. They often are licking their lips, and that is a sign of a submissive signal that's trying to say, oh, please don't hurt me. It has nothing to do with whether dogs love us or not. But, and I'm not saying never to hug your dog, but it just depends on the dog. It depends on the situation. It depends on whether when the dog begins to wiggle that you let them go or that you use a, I'm real big on verbal signals. So you can say to the dog, come here, smoochie, I want to hug you. And then you hug the dog and let them, and now I'm done. And over time, the dog knows, come here, Smoochie, I want to hug you, means you are actually physically going to do that. And if Smoochie doesn't want that, Smoochie might say, no, thank you, not right now. So what we're talking about, and it's the same thing with all the fear-free techniques, is consent. Consent for the dog to be hugged. For the dog to say, yes, I love being that close to you. I love smelling your neck. I love being smushed, you know. And I'm sure there are a lot of dogs who do love to be smushed, like people and cats. But when we give them consent, then we know that we're smushing them with their consent, and it makes them happy.
And what you're saying is allow the dog to choose what the dog yeah. wants to do. And I would argue that, yeah, totally. A lot of dogs, they don't care how they get the attention from us. They don't mind being hugged. But I'd argue a percent of dogs, for example, we know a higher percent of cats, especially, but we're talking dogs, that dogs, more so than we ever thought, may be suffering from arthritis than we previously yes. thought, maybe hurting, but they're not telling us, or may even have a ear infection that you haven't figured out yet, but the dog sure has. The dog knows I'm uncomfortable. So there we hug that dog who previously even enjoyed hugs, but now not so much because it hurts when you do that. Do you think sometimes us acting by mistake, like hugging is only one example, but acting inappropriately from the dog's perspective by not allowing consent and forcing ourselves in one way or another on the dog actually increases the number of dog bites we see?
Of course. And there was another article recently about people who saw their dogs growling and snarling, and they reached in to hug them because they said that, well, if my child was that upset, I'd want to hug them. And for dogs, that's not a call to be hugged. Growling and snarling is not a call to be hugged. We need to understand what they're trying to say to us, because I think there is no greater faux pas that a dog, or a mistake that a dog can make when they're living in a family, and that's to bite a family member. That's a huge mistake, and that's often why they end up leaving the house. And if we do something that inadvertently upsets the dog and they feel like the only way to get out of it is to snarl or snap or maybe bite, well, then we've just pushed them too far. And so what I'm talking about is a greater degree of understanding of what dogs find pleasing and when we need to give them choice to do certain things. Of course, there's going to be some of the time we need to take our dog somewhere. They have to get in the car. They need to go leave the room or things like that. But you can really put all those things under verbal control and make the dog have choice. And then they're comfortable when you ask them, do you want to be hugged? If they say no, then they don't.
However, there's some who think that it's my dog, therefore I can do what I want. Can you talk about that?
Well, dogs are sentient beings, and as a sentient being myself, I don't want to go through my day thinking that anybody can do whatever they want to me, so I would like to give that leeway to my pet. I have two cats, no dog at the moment, I confess, but when my cats were kittens, I spent a lot of time with my grandchildren showing them how to pick up the cat and what were the signs that they didn't want to be held anymore. And the signs were, if they wiggle or they meow, you must put them down. And now my cats know that my grandkids are going to pick them up nicely, and they know they can get away. So they approach them all the time to be picked up because there are rules for interaction. I think all humans like rules for interaction. And so do pets. And if they know what the outcome is going to be like, they're more willing to engage, more willing to interact. And if a dog that's always willing to interact suddenly is not, then the first thing I would think of, well, maybe they don't feel well. Maybe they're scared. Maybe they have intestinal upset. Maybe they have arthritis. But once you understand when your dog is willing to interact, when they don't, then you're a step ahead going, wow, what's making my dog act this way? And we can step in and you know, take care of them because we're their guardians, their people.
Pioneering veterinary behaviorist, Dr. Debbie Horwitz. Yes, you are. Co-editor of the book, Decoding Your Dog. I want to talk about that when we come back. And you mentioned two words, fear-free. I want you to explain what those two words mean when we come back here on the podcast. Yeah, I knew that. We'll be right back. Hi, friends. Steve Dale here. Itch, scratch, rub, chew, repeat. Does that sound like your pet? Help is here. Zymox-based skin and ear care products can help calm and soothe your pet's angry skin or red infected ears. For 25 years, Zymox ear drops, topical cream, shampoos, and conditioners have been helping pets find relief. Zymox is available online on Amazon and Chewy, at Petco, PetSmart, and other fine pet retailers, and from local veterinarians. Dr. Debbie Horwitz has spoken all over the world to veterinary professionals about pet behavior. You are a veterinary behaviorist, and some time ago, I had this idea that, and I want to mention his name, legendary veterinary behaviorist, grandfather of veterinary behavior, who I miss all the time, I think all the time. What would RK do? I'm talking about Dr. Yeah. RK Anderson. A veterinary behaviorist who legendary in the world of veterinary medicine. And Dr. Horwitz,
to us all.
You said, yes, let's do this. The book is called Decoding Your Dog. And I was honored to be involved in this book just out a couple of years ago. So it's still useful for sure. Because I'll tell you, the most common issue that people have is what? Tell me, behavior, right?
Yes, people, you know, a colleague of mine, Dr. Wayne Hunthausen, once said, people get their dogs, which it might have been an RK quote one time, people get their dogs because of their behavior, but they get rid of them because of their behavior.
Yeah, yeah.
So the very thing that brings the dogs to us, we love their behavior, we love watching them, we like being with them. Sometimes dogs being dogs make us feel like we can't live with them anymore, and that actually is what drives me as a veterinary behaviorist, because so many times dogs are being dogs and they do things that upset humans, and we can make humans understand that and we can help dogs do better.
And you've written so many articles and have contributed to books, have written books for veterinarians, but this book, Decoding Your Dog, is for pet parents, for everybody. And I said that word, those two words, pet parents. So that's the thing you and I have talked about privately. The human-animal bond is, it's wonderful that it's more intense than ever before. Is one of the reasons, however, dog bites do seem to be up, which we've been talking about, has to do with the fact that our dogs, well, they are our babies. They're not babies. At least they're not human babies.
I think there's a little kernel of truth in that. When a child is upset and crying and screaming, you do want to pick them up and hug them. But when dogs are upset and growling and snarling and snapping, they're not asking you to be hugged. Those are go-away signals in dogs. And there have been some articles that when they ask people why they do that, the people say, well, I would do that for my child. And so the dog is a family member. There's no question about it. And we are responsible for giving them the best medical and emotional care that we can. But in order to do that, we need to understand that emotionally, they're dogs. They take a part in our family that is like children because we can care for them and we enjoy them. But one of the things I say when I give talks is that if you look in the brain of a dog and you want to know what everything is labeled, what they do, everything's labeled dog. They only do dog stuff. So they never do child stuff or any of those kinds of things. They're going to make dog choices. And making dog choices is usually what gets them into trouble.
Yeah. But though not necessarily. It can be fun. Like, I lose my keys and my dog finds the keys in the house. I mean, that's helpful. I want to talk a little about, you mentioned two words earlier, fear-free. Can you explain what fear-free is, what these two words mean?
Well, fear-free, I remember being at the first meeting with Marty Becker and the then president of the American Animal Hospital Association and a few other people, when we began to talk about Fear Free, with the idea being that veterinary visits are very fear-inducing for dogs, cats, and their people. So the idea behind Fear Free, with it, the term that Dr. Becker came up with, he wanted to take the pet out of petrified so animals are not so afraid. And Fear Free focuses on what has come to be called cooperative care, that we take steps to make sure that the animal sees that what we're doing, we're cooperating with them and their signals. We go to look in their ear and the dog pulls away. So we say, well, just wait a minute, get a little peanut butter on a spoon and put that in front of the dog, and the dog licks the peanut butter, and you can look in the ear. If you see the ear is really infected, then you say, well, maybe I need some pain medication. So the idea behind Fear Free was to take the fear out of necessary veterinary care for the pet and for the owners, because owners are worried. Just like a parent that goes to the pediatrician, if their child's going to get a shot, is it going to hurt? Are they going to be sad? And so Fear Free works from when you walk through the door and if you need surgery, and when you walk home or before you put your pet in a car, and making that entire experience fear free. And it's a wonderful, wonderful movement that has been taken up by the veterinary profession in droves.
Well, yeah. So you've been around veterinary medicine a few years, and I've been around a few years too. I don't recall anything. It takes, historically, quite a while for something to catch on. Fear Free caught on quickly. It caught on big, and as it should. But do you recall anything catching on so fast?
I've never looked at it that way. But the one thing I can say about Fear Free that made it catch on so fast is that veterinarians and the people who work with pets don't want them to be afraid. And a good day, not all dogs or cats that come in are afraid or find what you do to them objectionable. Because much of what we do is not painful or not objectionable. Some animals have never left their house except to go to the veterinary hospital. They've never been touched by anybody that wasn't a family member. They've never been in a car. They've never had a leash on them. So many of the things that make, or been in a carrier, that make these animals fearful have nothing to do with veterinary care. And that's one of the things that we have realized as veterinarians, because no veterinarian ever went to work that day going, I'm going to frighten as many dogs and cats as I can today. They want it to be a pleasant experience from kittenhood on up. But sometimes there are other things that enter into it. So for the veterinarians, many of them have been doing this or would have liked to do it, and this just gave them the impetus and the tools to do it better. And that, I think, is why it caught on so fast. I don't think there's a veterinarian out there that would not rather go in every day and have their animals wagging their tail and happy to see them.
Of course. And by the way, to learn more about what we're talking about, which is Fear Free, check out fearfreehappyhomes.com. All right, here's something I'm asking everyone as I do these petcasts. What is the best thing for you about dogs?
The best thing for me about dogs?
Yeah.
They have no agenda. I love that about dogs. They wake up every day, they're happy, they have no agenda, they don't have anything to prove, they don't have any idea of exactly where they want to go or what they want to do every day. They want their physical needs taken care of, but they're just here to live in the world and be happy, to sniff, to run after a ball, to go swimming, to sleep on the bed. They just want the best of life, and if you know how, then they're not that hard to please. As long as you give them direction and give them tools to perform properly in their environment so they are a good canine companion to everyone, I think dogs are great. The only thing I don't like about dogs is when I lived in Michigan, having to take them out for a walk when it's really cold.
Being from Chicago, totally get that. Veterinary behaviorist, co-author of or co-editor of, where was it? Which one was it? I don't remember.
Co-editor.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd have to look if I wrote a chapter, but I don't think I did. I was a co-editor.
I think so, too. Co-editor of Decoding Your Dog, still available everywhere books are sold. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and a learning experience. You're a great teacher. Dr. Deborah Horowitz, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure to be with you. Hope we talk again soon.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast from Steve Dale, sponsored by Zymox. Veterinarian recommended, pet parent trusted for resolving pets' ear, skin, and oral conditions for over 25 years.